Let's start with our motivation tonight. And so we've all attained a precious human rebirth, a precious human body. This allows for the greatest possible spiritual progress. We wouldn't have a better opportunity for achieving enlightenment than we now have as human beings. Since there's no better working basis than we have now, it's important we know all the methods for making the best use of it. The most excellent way to make spiritual progress is to develop within ourselves more and more a kind and warm heart. Now, on the basis of a warm heart, we would then go on to develop the dedicated heart of a bodhicitta aim. We wish to achieve enlightenment, the wish to eliminate all our shortcomings and to achieve our fullest potential in order to be able to benefit everyone as best as is possible. So this is the best use that we can make of our precious human rebirth. Now there's many different types of human beings, and among all of them, it's very rare to come across to those who have any interest in benefiting their future lives, let alone in attaining enlightenment. When we look around, we see most people are only concerned about finding happiness for themselves in this lifetime alone. Nonetheless, everyone is the same, in that we all wish to be happy. No one wants to suffer or have problems. We can see no matter how well off we might become in this lifetime, no matter how many things we might enjoy, we don't seem to feel satisfied with what we have accumulated. Nobody really ever says, now I have enough, now I don't have to get any more. We're not content. We always want more. We can use up in our entire lives with this wanting more, with work, and yet it never comes to an end. So it really becomes this ever-repeating cycle, life after life. And although we think that the work of this life never comes to an end, it does. There is a time when it will end, at the time of our death. And if we're only concerned about this life, then it ends in a state of grief and sorrow rather than a state of happiness. Without mental happiness, our life remains unfulfilled and we die in an unhappy state. And so it's really important. We really want to try to work for some longer-lasting, mentally-based happiness. Physical happiness we achieve in this lifetime, it's not going to be very long-lasting. So if we want true lasting happiness, then we consider our future lives. And if we work toward achieving happiness in future lifetimes, that fulfills the definition of what it means to be a spiritual person, involved in a spiritual practice of Dharma. So the way to ensure happiness in future lifetimes involves taking certain preventative measures, we could call them. Specifically, that means restraining ourselves from committing negative or destructive actions. By doing this, we bring about happiness in future lifetimes. So keeping ethical discipline, then, it's a preventative measure that we can take that allows us to die in a happy state of mind. If we take these measures of becoming an ethical person, then at the time of death we have nothing to worry about. So let's take full advantage of this working basis that we have in our excellent human rebirth. And by dedicating our hearts purely with a bodhicitta aim to others and to achieving enlightenment. If we focus on this, then we will create the causes for some happiness in this life and in future lives to come. So in the last few months, we've received many excellent teachings on karma. Venerable Chödrön gave such extensive teachings, and then we've had quite a few of reviews. So I thought to do a little bit different tonight and really look on how we can bring these teachings into our life day by day so that we can make them pertinent and usable. Because if we just get all this information and we have all these facts in our head and we just keep it there, then it's just information. It doesn't really impact our lives very much. And so tonight, let's look a little bit on some practical ways that we can think about karma so that we can actually transform how we function, what choices we make, and how we understand karma and how it affects us. So to get us kind of in the stream of this, let's first look at the definition of karma. And this one is from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And he writes, karma is a Sanskrit word meaning action. It denotes an active force, the inference being that the outcome of future events can be influenced by our actions. To suppose that karma is some sort of independent energy which predestines the course of our whole life is simply incorrect. Who creates karma? We ourselves. What we think, say, do, desire, and omit creates karma. In everything we do, there is a cause and effect. A cause and effect. In our daily lives, the food we eat, the work we undertake, our relaxation, is all a function of action, our action. This is karma. I thought it was interesting how he said that what we omit creates karma. You know, I never think of that. It's interesting. And then in the Lamrim Chenmo, Tsongkhapa writes in the section on karma at the very beginning, he says, at this point, master the classifications of virtue and non-virtue, as well as their effects. You must then make it your practice to properly cast aside non-virtues and adopt virtues. For unless you reflect at length on the two kinds of karma and their effects, and then properly cast aside the non-virtuous and adopt the virtuous, you will not stop the causes of miserable rebirths. Thus you may fear the miserable realms and yet not be able to escape what you fear. Consequently, in order to be protected from the miserable realms at the time when you must experience the effects, let me say that again. Consequently, in order to be protected from the miserable realms at the time when you must experience the effects, you have to restrain the mind from engaging in non-virtue at the time when you are creating the causes. That really is the crux right there. This, in turn, is contingent upon attaining conviction about karma and its effects. And so then, just the four points that we always think about when we reflect on karma: the certainty of it, the magnification of it, not experiencing the effects of actions that you did not do, that the actions you have done do not perish. So the first thing maybe we could think about is that when we have a meditation practice, you know, it strengthens our attention, our mindfulness, and we are more connected to kind of what we're about to do, what we're doing. And so when we have a stronger focus on, you know, kind of what's propelling us, what we're doing, after some time, we start getting some space between what I'm thinking about doing and what I do. And that space in between is really important, really important. Because in that space, we can use our discriminating wisdom to kind of see, gosh, you know, is that what I want to do? Is that a good idea or not? If we don't work with that space, then many of our actions become very impulsive. You know, we get triggered by something or reacted to something and boom, you know, it just pops out and there we are. And usually in kind of a mess. At least that's my experience. And so in this space between thinking about what we're going to do and then the actual action, it's helpful to evaluate kind of what our mind is doing, what our body feels like. That's been very helpful because oftentimes I'm thinking about saying something, for example, and it seems perfectly reasonable to me. But if I check in on how my body is feeling, often it isn't calm, it isn't balanced. There's some tension or some kind of zingy stuff, you know, maybe a little adrenaline. And whenever I feel that, I usually don't speak then because I'm often not very clear. And, you know, this to me is, you know, bumping up against our ignorance and seems perfectly reasonable what we're about to do. And it's not so reasonable. So I think to let our body help us figure out kind of where we are, I think is really, at least that's been helpful for me. I think the second thing to think about is these feelings of acting in a certain way or you know, speaking in a certain way, these come from habits that we've created in past lifetimes. And in this lifetime, we're often just reinforcing them, you know. Another definition of karma, I think this one is from Jeffrey. You know, it can be called action, and often also the predisposition established by an action. So, you know, we have all these seeds in our minds and these predispositions. And so things that we've created in the past, I don't know about you, but when I think about some of the patterns and habits I have, you know, I've been working with these for years, you know. You know, they seem different depending on, you know, the age we are or whatever, but if you step back and look at them, some of them are, you know, quite embedded and have been there for a long time. And so it's really easy to act impulsively on these patterns or habits. But when we think about it, there's no reason that we have to follow those, you know. But if it's like anything in Buddhism, if we don't spend some time looking at what these habits and patterns are that we get involved with day by day, well, how are we ever going to move them if we don't start looking at what they are? And of course, that takes some courage and some honesty and transparency and some compassion for ourselves to kind of look to see what it is, you know. That's an example. You know, when I first came here, one of my habits that I had for most of my life, I will say, is when I was reacting to somebody, what somebody said, usually I heard it as a criticism, I would shut down and get kind of stone cold, you know, and withdraw. And that was so painful. And I worked on that for a long time, and it never moved. But once I got here and started applying some of the methods and really started looking and had the space to really look at how that was damaging to not only those around me, but to me, it was huge. And so once I got clear about that, then, you know, I was able to start working with it to turn that. And I don't do that so much anymore. And it's been such a help and relief, you know. And that's something that I had for many years. So I don't think there's anything in the mind that we can't turn if we get clear about what it is and see, you know, how it's not helpful, but it's harmful, you know, to ourselves or others. But we have to look, you know. And we have to have the conviction, you know, we're intelligent, you know, we're not just animals that just react with instinct, you know, we can override all that. So it's really helpful to have some conviction in that, I think. And then we often hear and often think that whatever I experience is the ripening of my karma. That's a very common thing that one would say. But we have to be careful about thinking that, because it can lead to misunderstanding. And so here's what His Holiness writes that illustrates this misunderstanding, I think, quite well. So again, the thought is, whatever I experience is the ripening of my karma. He says, we cannot throw up our hands whenever we find ourselves confronted by unavoidable suffering. To say that every misfortune is simply the result of karma is tantamount to saying that we are totally powerless in life. If this were correct, there would be no cause for hope. We might as well pray for the end of the world. A proper appreciation of cause and effect suggests that far from being powerless, there is much we can do to influence our experience of suffering. Old age, sickness, and death are inevitable, but as with the torments of negative thoughts and emotions, we certainly have a choice in how we respond to the occurrence of suffering. If we wish, we can adopt a more dispassionate and rational approach. And on that basis, we can discipline our response to it. On the other hand, we can simply fret about our misfortune, but when we do, we become frustrated. As a result, afflictive emotions arise and our peace of mind is destroyed. When we do not restrain our tendency to react negatively to suffering, it becomes a source of negative thoughts and emotions. There is thus a clear relationship between the impact suffering has on our heart and mind and our practice of inner discipline. According to the theory of dependent origination, everything that arises does so within the context of innumerable causes and conditions. If this was not so, as soon as we came into contact with something that we considered good, automatically we would become happy. Whenever we came into contact with something we considered bad, automatically we would become sad. The causes of joy and sorrow would be easy to identify, and life would be very simple. We would have good reason to become attached to one sort of person or thing or event, and to be angry with others and want to avoid others. But that is not reality. So then I think that brings the question, how do we work with these sufferings that arise in this life in a balanced, healthy way? Because we're not going to be able to avoid problems here, no matter what we do, no matter how we do it. So I think finding the patterns that we have that are corresponding to the types of things that we're experiencing is helpful. And to do that, instead of saying something like, you know, I was such a bad person in a past lifetime that I did this and now I'm experiencing this suffering result, that's not going to be helpful. And, you know, that might sound like, oh, we would never do that. But, you know, I think sometimes when we experience something, underneath all of the busy or the chatter or whatever, there can be some quite critical thoughts about ourselves, you know. At least that's my experience. And so instead, I think it's much more beneficial to be more and more aware of what the pattern is that I'm experiencing. Because if we look at it, you know, there are patterns, are there not? Am I the only one that can look at the patterns? I mean, you know, some things happen over and over again. I get involved in the same kind of reaction and tension and, you know, irritability or whatever. You know, the faces are different, you know, but here it is again. And of course, you know, if we just look at, you know, well, it's that one, then, you know, it's hopeless. We're never going to do any movement. But if we look at our patterns, you know, what is it that I keep bumping up against here? That's really helpful, I think. And so, you know, what are some examples? You know, it could be that I'm too critical. I say negative things about others. Or maybe I exaggerate or lie, you know. Whatever it is. But if we just notice it and observe it and are aware of it, whatever they are, you know, there's more than one, at least in my case, be aware of them and then make the determination that I'm going to work on decreasing that habit. You know, I'm not just going to go with the impulse, whatever it is. Because of course we can change and develop new habits and patterns. And blaming others for our difficulty, you know, that just shows how out of tune we are with cause and effect. It just doesn't work. Does that make sense? Yeah. If people have comments, please jump in. Another thing that we can look at has to do with overcoming this feeling of being defeatist, kind of. It's kind of a I deserve this suffering kind of mind. And again, this may not be very blatant at all, but, you know, the longer I look at my mind and the longer I understand the influence of this, especially this country and the Christian kind of view, the more that I see that that's kind of stuck in there. Especially if I do something that I wished I hadn't done, you know, if I'm disappointed in myself or whatever I've done.
You talked about the compassion, and I started to look at that, how compassion will look, and how do I tap into that compassion towards myself. And what helped me, and I'm working with it, is because I'm really critic.
Mm-hmm. Critical.
Mm-hmm. Critical. So I said, okay, this is a pattern that you learn. Mm-hmm. It's like you learn to wash dishes mm-hmm. a certain way. Mm-hmm. There's other ways, but that's how you learned it.
Yep.
And you think that's the reality.
Yep.
And so there's no, you don't need to keep shame out.
Yes.
Remove the
yes,
shame.
Yes.
It's something my mom was beating me or she was not, but it's an example.
Yep.
She learned she was beating maybe before, and this is the wheel that we turn and turn
and turn.
So this is what I remind myself.
Yes, that's lovely.
This is just an habit, like anything else.
Yep.
And so now you see it. Outside, you have examples of other way of doing things, and now you just need to try it.
Yeah, that's it.
And
lovely. Yeah, perfect. That we accept. This is that acceptance piece that's so important. that I accept that this is some of my pattern and habit. That's all. No judgment, no criticism. This is just what I do. Many, many, many causes and conditions that built this for many, many lifetimes probably. No reason to feel shame. No reason to feel like the worst one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it allows me to turn it towards the others. It's the same thing. They have patterns.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like me.
Yep.
So
yep.
It kind of breaks the...
Yes.
Okay, and you will learn something else, or she will learn.
Yep.
Just
yep.
like me. And some people learn quick, mm-hmm. some people learn slow, mm-hmm. and that's what you need to accept too.
Yes.
We all have a different pace.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. Stubborn, more stubborn, less stubborn.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Scared to change.
Yeah.
Haven't found the antidote yet that seems to work. Oh, yeah, many, many reasons.
Yeah.
Many. Uh-huh.
When we apply that accepting attitude, then we can actually look at our painful experiences. I'd say they're the result of previous karma, but use that in a productive and helpful way. And
yes.
the result and flavor of that is way different than if we blame ourselves
yep.
for it.
Yep.
And to me, it's not that we're stuck in the results of our own karma either, mm-hmm. what we produced in the past, because mm-hmm. part of what of that is things are ripening based on what conditions we are causing now.
Yep, yep.
And so we do have some control on it. Like our behavior now creates different conditions for yep. what will ripen.
Yep, yep.
But sometimes we do use, we yep. do say, this is painful situation, the result of previous karma, may it be ripened, and mm-hmm. I'm done with it. And mm-hmm. you take an accepting and easy and happy view of it.
Yeah. Open to it, kind of. I think the first step of it is to really look to see if we have some criticalness going on kind of under the surface. It's hard to get at that, I think. You know, it's kind of buried. It's kind of buried. And it takes courage, I think, to look at that. You know, it's quite solid, I think, also. And so, you know, if we kind of, one of the antidotes that I like, if we feel like, you know, I'm suffering and, you know, I cause this whenever, you know, and if I can't kind of get out of that and I'm kind of getting hard on myself or it's kind of getting locked in sort of, you know, you can think about how anything that we experience never comes from just one cause. Never. You know, like the Buddha said that a bucket is not filled by the first drop nor the last drop. It's filled by the collection of all the drops. So, you know, whatever we experience is not just the result of one negative thing we've done in the past. You know, even an accumulation of some several negative things that we've done. There's almost a countless amount of causes and conditions that have come together in order for us to experience something. And so we can train ourselves to remember that and get in touch with the vastness and even kind of look at what are all the things, you know? So I took one example. Let's say that, you know, I get in a car accident. And I might initially think, oh, it's because I've injured someone in a past life or, you know, damaged their belongings, you know. So this kind of simple linear, you know, I think underneath that is some criticalness, you know. And certainly some solidness, you know, I'm so powerful, just me, I can cause this, you know. But, you know, I mean, think about all the karmic forces with the other person that we got into the accident with, you know, the car we hit or they hit us, whatever. Then the weather, how come I went out at that time and not another time? You know, the condition of the road, you know, the traffic, You just go on and on and on and on. And, you know, sometimes when I do that, my mind discounts those things. Oh, that's nothing, you know, or that's not so much. Really, it was me, you know? So it's really helpful to look at that, you know, that all of these things have a lot of weight, you know? There's not just one. It's really helpful to look at that. And so when we start looking at all the causes and conditions and ask our mind to do that, then what we're doing, of course, is broadening our view, aren't we? You know? And then that kind of starts deconstructing this solidity of me. I'm the one, you know? I'm either the victim or I'm the one that caused it, you know? So it opens that up and stops this, you know, then further, I'm the guilty one, or I deserve this, or it's my fault, you know. And of course, you know, we're responsible, but there's such a difference between being responsible in terms of our behavior and saying that everything is my fault, look what happens. And so oftentimes, you know, we can have a relationship with the things that happen to us, and mostly the negative ones. The positive ones we pretty much often discount or don't even notice, you know? It's interesting. But, you know, the negative ones, they get our attention certainly, and then we start beating ourselves up about it, you know? And I think, you know, if we have some low esteem, if we've had really difficult or abusive experiences in our life, this all contributes kind of to this kind of poor quality view that we can carry around. And even that's hard to look at and hard to kind of unearth sometimes. And one of the best methods, I think, for looking at that is to look at how much of my behavior is driven by being a perfectionist. That really gives us a lot of information about kind of what our core value with ourself is and how much compassion we have. If we get involved in something and we start having obstacles and we can't let go of this precise way it was going to be, that has a little bit to do with kind of perfectionist and also not being even connected to, you know, cause and effect. And, you know, that solid me, you know. I'm going to do this, and it's going to be this way. Of course, here we see that a lot. Yeah.
I don't understand what does perfectionism, you know, what's the cause of that?
I don't know. I think sometimes if we had really hard experiences when we were growing up, and especially then, and we felt like, you know, when a kid learns, you learn kind of inside out. So whatever happens to you, you believe you kind of caused it. So a lot of things can happen to us as kids that we had no part in, but, you know, we're experiencing it. So we get this idea that we caused it, and then because it's a bad experience, then we're bad. You know, we're lacking, we're tainted, we're, you know, not whole somehow. Yeah. And so if you have that underlying kind of idea, then it just is logical that we go to the other extreme. We're kind of beings of extremes, aren't we? So if I feel that way, then let me do it perfectly, and then, see, they'll see and I'll see that I'm just fine. So we kind of set ourselves up for a lot of pain when we do that, because there isn't anything perfect here.
Sure. Yeah, well, for me, it's also helpful what you're saying, because, you know, sometimes I think the ego wants to think that we may be the cause of somebody's suffering, and it may be in that other person's best interest to make us feel guilty about it. Mm. And so I think it's good to broaden the view. I think for me, it really helps me to see that there are additional causes and conditions that are the results of the person's own behavior, and that have very little to do with me.
Mm-hmm. So it puts me out of that guilty situation.
Yep.
And allows me to see more of the reality.
Yes.
Of the situation.
Yep.
So that's very helpful.
Yep. 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 Yeah, when we grasp onto this solid me that was so bad in the past and now I deserve what's happening, then, you know, the outcome of that is that either I feel kind of the victim or I feel kind of the criminal that's being punished, you know? And again, in this society, there is so much that we absorb about being bad and needing to be punished, to be wrong, you know? And so it's really helpful to look at that, you know, and try not to bring that in and let that kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like you kind of start marinating in that somehow, you know? It's not helpful. It's not helpful. And that's why compassion is so powerful. If we have compassion for ourselves, that drops all that junk. Because those are two different minds. I can't think I'm, you know, pretty lousy and have compassion. Those two things don't go together, you know. And two, I think, you know, if we have this very narrow view, I'm the one, I did it, or I'm bad, or, you know, I'm not worthy, or, you know, I messed up again, or, you know, those kinds of thoughts, then not only is that a suffering state of mind, but there's a lot of energy putting into making that even stronger. And that is not helpful either. Because then, you know, that ramps up how we react to things then. You know, oh, this is the most terrible thing, you know. Or even if it's a happy thing, this is the most wonderful thing. And we have this yo-yo thing going on, you know. And that's not helpful. So it's more helpful to really train our minds to see that what we experience here in this configuration that we have with these bodies, these minds, this environment, this universe, whatever you want to call it, this realm, is that our experience is going to be up and down all the time. Isn't it? It's up and down every day. That's going to be continual. That's not going to leave us. So what do we do with that? You know? What do we do with that?
Let me count the ways.
Yeah. Yeah, get out of it. But while we're working to get out of it, how do we react to the ups and downs is critical. It's critical. Yes, and also it then affects how we get out and when we get out. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, predicting when I'm going to feel happy or unhappy is pretty crazy because I created the causes for my happiness or unhappiness in past lives, generally, you know. So things are going to arise. No control. No control.
Of the outer condition.
Of the outer condition.
Yes.
Yeah, of the outer condition. So whatever happens, if we can start working with the ups and downs and the mind I use is nothing special, no big deal. Nothing special, no big deal. No big deal. That's what I apply to the mind that is going, you know, whatever, for whatever. I say, nothing special, no big deal. Nothing surprising here. Nothing extraordinary. What do I expect? Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm unhappy. And of course, you know, we know the happiness comes from, you know, negative action. I mean, past virtue, yeah, and the unhappiness from, you know, negative, destructive things. We know that. But what I'm talking about here more is how we cling to it, how we make it so solid that it then becomes our experience, our reality. So again, we're kind of talking about the space, getting some space, and recognizing that we have a choice in how we react, how we enter into it, how we experience it. So not to make a big deal out of it. That's the point. Yeah.
What you're saying just reminds me of something that Venerable said in a recent interview with someone from Pendling Center in Denmark. It's still being posted on the web. But, can I just read you the response? So they asked her, you have been a nun for many years. Can you tell us a little bit about your greatest joys and greatest challenges? The Venerable says, people have asked me that question before and I don't think like that. I don't think about what are my greatest joys and what are my greatest challenges. I don't find that way of thinking very helpful. I find it much more helpful just to do my practice. If you think of joys, then you cling to having some fantastic experience. If you think of challenges, then you will focus on all the obstacles. How will I ever get anywhere? Neither of those ways is very conducive for practicing the Dharma. It's better to just do the practice, create the causes, wait for the results, and the results will come when they are ready.
Yeah, that's
it,
isn't it?
Right,
yeah, that's it.
But we do think like that. I mean, there's questions, we're always pondering, you know, what are the challenges and what are the joys? And we've got that in that box, we've got that in that box, and whichever one comes up really kind of leads us on how that day's going to go or that moment's going to go. So the way she's talking is practice.
Or even how, you know, you'll start your day and it's like, okay, I'll maneuver this way and this way and get that there and this there and this there, and then it will be a good day, you know.
And when does that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the duckies in the row method. Doesn't work. So to really to have some equanimity in the changing mood states, that's how I think of it, you know. Some equanimity in the changing mood states. My mind's going to go all over the board. It's okay. No big deal. Yeah. Now, you know, I protect myself when my mind is in the, you know, toilet, in the tank. I don't interact so much because I'm working internally, you know. So we have to give ourselves permission to, you know, slow it down a little bit and work with what's coming up, instead of what's out there. And to me, that is a practice of compassion, very much, yeah. And letting go of outcomes, you know. If I stop, then the outcome might not happen, you know. That's not the important part right then. The important part is to work with the mind. Because really, if we create more peace in our mind, you know, at first, when you think about it, you know, if I let go of the highs and lows, then what? This flat line, you know, kind of dead? You know, what? Then what? But that's not what it is. If you do it properly, you end up getting a ton of space and energy that you're not wasting on the up and down baloney. And then you can help. You can benefit. You can study, you can increase compassion, you know, work on all of these qualities. But if I'm just drug around by the ups and downs, not much is happening. Not much is happening. Sometimes I touch this screen and it goes somewhere I'm not wanting to be. This is a down moment. No big deal. No big deal.
I have found, as you said, that it would be quite interesting to know that I focus so much on the unwholesome karma ripens, you know, how to extract myself from the state of mind that sometimes shows up. But to ever truly think that when something virtuous happens, that it is the ripening of my virtue, and that it's also gone, it's also done.
Mm-hmm.
And to rejoice, and then to say, all right, that's done. Now what are you going to do about creating the causes to have even greater happiness or more benefit? You know, I just mm-hmm. take that as an entitlement,
mm-hmm.
and I take the negative as something that comes from outer space mm-hmm. that lies on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get those a little bit closer together, you know, yeah. so I have equanimity.
Yeah.
But I don't ever see the causes for the good things that happen. I just kind of take them as, oh, wow, this is great, you know? Mm-hmm. I deserve
this is how it should be.
This is how it should be.
How it should be.
I don't say no big deal.
Yeah.
Nothing special. I say,
yeah.
this is a big deal.
Yeah.
This is very special.
Yeah.
So it's really helpful, this equanimity piece.
Yeah. So one of the things that I worked with a lot and work with now sometimes too is to pay attention to what kind of adrenaline I have in my system, because being caught up in the highs or the lows always involves adrenaline, you know, in the body. So there's that zingy feeling, that ooh, or that you know, either way, it's adrenaline. And it's so easy to get hooked on that just because it's so habitual. When you think about out, especially out in the world, everything is infused with a buzz, you know? Everything. It's either the best of the best or the worst of the worst. Everything. You know? I mean, you spend your money and buy this to get the best of the best, you know? This happens to you and it's the worst of the worst. And if we relate to things that change in that way, we're infusing it with a lot of adrenaline, I believe. And so it takes a while to, you know, uncover that adrenaline habit, I think. And I always ask myself, okay, is there calmness here? Is there calmness here? You know, or is there some Twitter? You know, it's like I know the feeling. I don't have a whole lot of words for it. But, you know, it helps to try to identify, you know, when the flash comes. It's like the flash, when the flash comes. Like, oh, look what's on the table to eat. Or, oh, listen to what she just said. Or, yeah, or what's not on the table to eat. Yeah. Or what she just said, yeah. And to recognize in that moment that if I am totally hooked on the highs and lows right then, the ups and downs. That is such, like, who is it? Lama Yeshe used to say, such low level, how do you call that? Low level?
Low grade happiness.
That's animal happiness. That's what the kitties do when we put the bowl down with their munchies.
That's true.
You know? Oh, I don't want to go through life that way, I don't think. And so, you know, of course, we just experience the up and downs, you know, no big deal. But we can look, you know, if I'm unhappy and things are going badly, I can look at, you know, what's the karmic cause of that? And see if I'm repeating something that's going to bring that, because the habitual ones are the hardest ones, you know, I think, that we kind of came in with, that we keep nurturing, and that, you know, we can go out with. So those are the ones to pay attention to. And when we work on that, we have to work on that with, like Venerable Yeshe was saying, with such compassion, acceptance and kindness. Because if we have any disdain for that, we aren't going to move it an iota. It'll just go under the surface again, somewhere else, and lay dormant a little while, and then pop back up again. Pop back up again.
Can I have one?
Yes, please.
Well, you know, we tend to look at the what we consider the negative states, but since we have the joy retreat, I've really thought a lot about the thing of the near enemy of joy being exuberance.
Yes.
And I hadn't really watched that so much. And it's really, you're pretty checked out.
Yep. Yep.
You're pretty checked out.
Yep. Yep.
And it's not peaceful.
Yep. It's adrenaline. And you know what? What's the function of adrenaline? Adrenaline is there to help us flee for our life or fight for our life. So whenever it's in the bloodstream, we are doing primitive things. Primitive things. You know? And we can see that. I can see that in my behavior. If I get angry, that's adrenaline-based. I am doing primitive things. What's coming out of my mouth is primitive sounds, you know, that are only hurtful. Alicia?
You're so used to that kind of happiness, the exuberant kind of afflicted happiness that I have heard it, I've heard it say that, you know, the calmness experience when you practitioner, it's not really happiness. It doesn't look like happiness. How can it be happiness if you're not singing, dancing, and otherwise jumping around? So it's it doesn't translate because of the emphasis on the other kind of happiness for society right now.
And I think too, I don't know, when I first came here, I went through some withdrawal with that kind of, you know, buzz thing. And, boy, I had to work with my mind, you know, because there was and it was that solid me mind that was fearful that if I let go of that, then what? You know, it has that feel to it too, you know, that I couldn't trust that if I didn't ride on the ups and downs, then it would be totally, you know, boring nothing in the middle. And so it is kind of a leap of faith and conviction that we let go of those things and allow ourselves to experience what comes in its place, you know. And that takes some time.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a gap between the letting go.
Yeah.
And starting to notice there's something else.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's helpful to, you know, I mean, it is hard work. When we're going to change a behavior, what does that look like? So I'm doing this and I want to do that. So I am aware when I do that, the one I don't want to do. And that goes on for quite a while. Then I start figuring out kind of the antecedents of that, the what it feels like before I actually do it. And then after a while, I can notice when I'm in the middle of it. And so I keep working with this, trying to be aware, and to be aware without judgment, and to be aware with acceptance, until I brought acceptance and no judgment into my practice. I got nowhere with this, with any behavior I wanted to change. So this acceptance, this compassion, then after a while, I start feeling when the flash just comes. So now for like some of these things, I'll feel a flash of energy, and when it gets to my gut, it seems to come from below. I don't, you know, that's just me, whatever. But when it starts coming and it gets to around my belly, I say drop it, or I say no big deal, or, you know, I work with it there. And then it doesn't generally manifest too much. And even if it does, I can kind of work with it pretty quickly. And that's taken years, and the thing that moved it the quickest and the most was having some compassion and acceptance that my mind was, you know, doing these negative actions, these responses that I didn't care for, that only brought misery, you know, to myself and to others. You know. So it's not a quick thing. It's not this one antidote, and there it is. It's not that way. You know, we have to stay with the pain of, here I am doing it again. You know, here I am doing it again. I can remember the moment when I finally understood and got clear about the example I used before, when I would get, you know, reactive to someone and I would shut down and get cold. I remember I was at this altar here. I was taking down the water bowls, and a very kind person came up to me and asked if they could help. And it was at that moment, it was like, I am done with this, no more. I'm done, no more. And so then that moved me to feel what it feels like when I just start, you know, getting into that headspace. And then for a while, I would leave the area when that would, you know, when it would come up. I would leave and try not to show that face, you know, to those I lived with. And doing that, then I got closer and closer to just before it would start to arise, you know. So I don't think there's anything that we do that the mind can't work with in turn, you know. If we have conviction in the Buddhist teachings, you know. And this is the hard work of it, I guess, you know, that we don't abandon ourselves. We don't abandon ourselves. And then kind of the last thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, and then I thought we'd do some meditation, was karma and the lamrim. So in general, the teachings on karma are presented with the initial scope motivation. So this is the one where I want to refrain from acting destructively because I feel fear the consequence that I will experience. I want to avoid suffering in future lives. So that's really the initial motivation. The intermediate level is that we start understanding, and this is where, to me, and for me, renunciation really comes in. I want to avoid all of this because I want to gain liberation. And no matter what realm I'm reborn in you know, cyclic existence, problems are there. I will never be free of them. I'm done with it. I'm done. I'm done. No more. You know? Done. So, you know, that's the motivation. That's the aspiration. And then, you know, when we think this way, then of course the wider scope is needed, the wider view, which starts bringing an emptiness then. Because that's the ticket, isn't it? Out. Because that's the root of all the problems. So if I can understand emptiness, that's going to help me with, you know, what I do experience next life. So that's why so much the focus is on trying to understand that, you know, with the time that we have. It's so critical, so important. And of course, that takes so long, you know. So, you know, we, again, you know, keep ourselves away from the highs and lows. I can see my mind too. For a while, I got kind of disillusioned with emptiness. It's too hard, you know? And boy, did my practice stop. And then I started working on that, and now things are going in. You know, I'm a baby, itty bitty baby with it, of course, but I could see anyhow how things stop when you have that discouragement. That's the worst thing, discouragement. And that's a low, isn't it, you know? And what's it feel like when we start going down the discouragement road? Do we know what that feels like in body and mind? And what are the antidotes we use for that? What works?
You think about your potential.
Yeah? And that works for you?
It does.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We had a course, a teaching about recognizing the self. And I've been working on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like how that know if somebody looks me a certain way or act, how that things arise and act a certain way. Mm-hmm. So I try to recognize that. Mm. I don't call it adrenaline, mm-hmm. but it's like pride or mm-hmm. whatever the feeling. Mm-hmm. And I try to do the reverse.
Oh, nice.
Of what that self wants to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I try to turn it.
Yeah.
And not follow that, because there's a lot of pride in me. A protection that it's pride.
Yeah. Yeah, protection, pride, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I try to do the reverse.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk to her.
Yeah.
I will go talk to her.
Yeah.
But it's...
Yeah.
It's,
yeah, that's so good, yeah. That works with pretty near everything. And, you know, anything that we have in the mind that's bringing difficulty, if we apply the opposite, it will move us.
Yeah.
And the only thing we have to get out of the way is pride, usually. Yeah.
Sopa. Yeah. When she came back from her... 1 year retreat, we were talking, and she talks to that, to the self, like, you are the problem, get out of here.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
So I try to recognize that.
Yeah.
You are the problem.
Yeah.
That because I follow that, I'm in trouble, I have pain.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to remember it. I was little, I needed that to protect myself, and now I don't need that anymore.
Yeah. It's beyond its usefulness anymore.
Rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. We have many of those. Yeah. Habits. Those are the habit things. Yep. Yeah.
When I start to sink, I find it helpful to think of all the things that are going well.
Yes.
And I also find that part of the equanimity meditation where really the people's help so far outweighs their harm.
Yeah.
And if I could just bring that to mind, it helps a lot because it's so true and it's easy to see.
Yep.
But can you, the help that people give you so outweighs the harm.
I mean,
it's like, and I can list all the ways that I'm benefiting from, you know, this. I don't have to hold on to this reactivity if I can make my mind go there because I, you know, I'm convinced, even though I can't do it, that I need to love everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have to have a feeling of affection. And when we were talking about equanimity recently, I said it wrong, that I need to have this feeling of affection to have what Venerable writes is open-hearted concern.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think you can actually have that without affection there. I mean, it's easy to do that when you have kind of that warm-hearted affection for people. It's very easy to get there then. So I think those are very related. Why make it hard on yourself by making the person an enemy?
Yeah.
Neutral.
So, and so we're back to the same thing again about we have to figure out how to have open-hearted concern for ourselves and love and compassion for ourselves. What's that feel like? What is the mind doing when we're in that space? When do we allow that? When is it ever good enough? That's another question I ask myself all the time. When's it good enough? When I'm, you know, didn't get this done, when's it good enough? You know? Just to turn it, you know, to turn it.
I have some responses from folks. So Tracy says she thinks about her incredible good fortune to have met the Dharma and great teachers. Heather says, when I get discouraged, it helps me to see how my spiritual mentors were once just like me.
Yeah.
And I can achieve the same thing if I put in the effort.
Yeah.
And Cheryl says, I think about how this is a wrong view, and I ask, what would the Buddhas and our teachers have to say about it?
Yeah. That's good, yeah. It's like appropriate attention or inappropriate attention.
When I think about my potential, I'm not just thinking about my ultimate potential that seems so far away, but how I know I can be in a better head state that sometimes I am.
Yeah.
And I think about a lot for me about potential of being able to be compassionate for others, because that's a lot of what I try to focus on when I'm inspiration. Mm-hmm. So then that comes a lot very close to what Venerable Tarpa was talking about.
Yeah.
And I think about a potential to have a better headspace, and I try to generate a lot through thinking about compassion.
Yeah. I do that one too.
And I've been trying to do that more for myself.
Yes.
Your encouragement through our safe classes.
Yeah, I start with me, I say, okay, You want to make yourself miserable? Okay, is that what you want to do? And the answer is no. You know, when I get it clear, the answer is no. But if I never ask that question, I'll have some miserable. You know?
I still find it helpful to, for some while now, is to, when my mind is sinking one way or another, is to just realize I need, in this moment, I need to make my mind more stable.
Yeah.
Just remembering that.
Yeah.
Make my mind stable here.
Yeah.
Sometimes that has different words attached to it.
Yep.
But so usually I'm taking refuge in the wrong thing at that moment. That's what's interesting to me about doing that. That way, I'm not really being very realistic about what samsara has got on its plate for me at that moment.
Yep. And that mind of more stable, that's the no big deal mind.
Yeah, I don't it really have to is. Let this thing drop down. There's no need to do that.
Yep, that's right. You know, this is a fortunate place that we're here, because out in the world, all we have to do is do something different and get out of the space, you know, whatever we're in, and we never change.
We don't have to deal with stuff.
Yeah, we don't have to deal, you know, we just, you know, get distracted with the next thing, you know, I'll go get a latte and chill or whatever, you know, instead of, it's here, it's right here, it's right here, what am I going to do? I'm going to impact people.
Or you could just avoid.
Yep, that's it exactly. Yeah. So then the advanced level is I want to refrain from acting destructively, because if I don't, it really hampers my ability to help others. How can I help others if I am constantly going through these ups and downs? I like this one. And so this brings all the paramitas in, doesn't it? You know? It affects my ability to help others when I let my mind go to the ups and downs. So let's do a little meditation on some of these points, and just to get kind of an experience now. And so let's settle the mind and the body. Pay attention to our posture. Bring our focus inward. Focused on our breath, or the image of a Buddha for a little bit. Calm our minds here for a few minutes. Now identify some of those habits or patterns of behavior that result in difficulties for yourself. Those patterns that destroy your peace of mind. And again, without judgment, just identify those habits that are problematic. take one of those habits or patterns that you thought about, and maybe one of them that was that brought you a problem very recently, so it's kind of fresh in the mind. Now trace your mind back a little bit. Think about the incident, the example. You know, I was talking to somebody, they said this, and I got angry, or, you know, whatever it is. And now think about what your mind was doing before you heard that. Where was your attention? What were you involved in? Try to get a sense of some of the moments before this pattern arose. Now go back and imagine this situation again that you brought up. And as it plays itself out and you're imagining that, imagine yourself responding to this example with no big deal, nothing special here. It's not affecting my peace of mind. I can open my view. Nothing to hold tight onto. Just let it go. Now play that out. comments or things that you bumped up against doing that?
It is a big deal.
But it is a big deal.
In the old habits, that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
But, yes, but, yep. Yes, but,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when I continued to do it, I could see my mind, even recalling it, how the situation would have been totally different. And I could see the difference in the state of mind, from the way it was at that moment, and conjuring up what it would have been like if I had been able to come to a bigger picture. Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, when we're right at that place, bumping up against that, but it was a big deal, that's the place to me where compassion comes in. If I let it go, I am kind to myself. And the other person too, but I am kind to myself if I let it go. Yeah. And again, it's like you say, it's the habit though. It's the habit. You know? This is where the track is. This is where the mind goes.
There's a lot of, when we get into those places, there's a lot of, my mind can sometimes watch what I'm doing, knowing the experience of what happens to me when I'm in that mind. Mm-hmm. So I can almost, that little spy that's there, going, you know what this mind does to you. You know what this exchange is going to feel like after you walk away from this. I can watch myself do
it. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
And then sometimes
because you're in the middle of it now.
Do that, but I can. Yeah. I have a little bit of space to say it's so familiar, and I know what the result's going to be. So, and sometimes I can stop it. Sometimes.
Yeah.
And, but it's information.
Yeah.
You know, that's the part that's picking up more.
I found interesting the meditation upon looking at, you know, what did you do or thing, thought of that before the situation came up. And I think the correlation between a self-centered thought and then the action, whatever happens, is very much so. Just recently at the ordination, I could observe that actually in myself and really see the connection. Okay, here I totally observe with my own self-interest, and then I get this problem, then I don't agree with whatever comes up.
Yeah.
Or I'm more in flow, dwelling in Dharma and really recognizing what's going on and applying the antidotes and whatever, then it's just like, it's so at ease, you know, and I'm not disturbed in my happiness, whatever is in front of me. Right now.
Peace of mind. Yeah. It gets complicated because, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll notice that, you know, someone is asking me of something and I have all my stuff in my head. It's got to be this and this and this, got to do this. And, you know, the effort to drop that and come focus present, hello, here you are, you know, it's not so easy. It's not so easy.
With habitual things, then sometimes we apply the antidotes and we have some success. And then there's this disappointment when it pops up again and we don't have success in certain incidences. And then I think it's good to remember that, you know, I did apply antidotes in the past and they were effective.
Yeah.
And to take an overall look and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm having success more often.
Yep.
I'm seeing this more clearly.
Yep.
And I'm having good feelings come up. That I'm realizing that when I don't give in to that, how much better it feels.
Yep. And I think what you're hitting on is this thing about our practice. And to me, everything in Buddhism is about peeling the layers and getting more and more and more subtle. And it's the same with antidotes. At first, it's kind of a gross run. I throw something at it, and it's like, it doesn't work, or maybe it did. And then I try it again, it's not, and you know. But over time, you have like, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 different things. And then after a while, it's like just that flavor, and you know exactly what to turn it with, you know. So this is how we get more subtle, more subtle, more subtle. And that all hinges on our meditation, you know, to calming our mind and getting ourselves focused and clear, I think.
I guess part of what I'm seeing too is that the really renouncing that habit and saying that, when I did have success, you know, maybe I have an antidote that does work, and I just need to wholeheartedly apply it and remember that. It felt good when I applied it, and it worked. That's really what I need to be doing. Yeah. Sometimes you don't want to renounce our stance or opinion.
And not fall into discouragement then, because that's what the result would be, at least in my mind. Yeah, those are good.
Quite a few comments on that, but there was a nice one from Tracy who said, it's helpful to remember what it feels like to be around someone whose mind is strong and stable and want to have a mind like that.
Nice.
The meditation helped me see that. You know, when you make a big deal, you rope so many people story when you're
making
how harmful that is.
Yeah.
I think we can stop.
Drop it now,
Dropping the lid. Yeah. Your last song.
Yeah.
Reinforcements.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So maybe we'll stop now. Thank you.
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzing Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends. May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it, have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase.
Peerless Supreme Spiritual Leader, Omniscient King of the Shakyas,
the Motherly Tara, Supreme Bestower of Longevity and Wisdom, Vast Ocean Assembly of Sources of Refuge, grant propitiousness here and now for a nectar of benefit and bliss to flow. With a clear mind of extensive learning gained from following the wondrous traditions of Tupten, the Able One's teachings, you bring clarity to masses of disciples with the light of children, the lamp of the Dharma. May your lotus feet remain unfaltering for a very long time. Through your dharmic deeds of hearing, thinking, meditating, and so on, place those who seek the liberated path in harmony through immaculate discipline. Please lead all beings to liberation with undeclining excellent qualities of scripture and insight, and establish them in the glory of eternal bliss. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Ashravasti Abbey in the West, flourish.